Congratulations, you're listening to Podcast Rebellion.
Welcome to Podcast Rebellion, everybody. This is Juco All-American, joined as always by Whiskey Wednesday. We are talking Vandy and A&M. So let's actually just jump straight into it, because we are both, I think, in a little bit of a time crunch. Ole Miss beat Vanderbilt 33-7, covered the spread. Of course, that means everybody was really happy with the outcome and how the game went. Yeah, it was a great first half and very frustrating second half. The defense didn't frustrate at all the whole game, but you know, a 26-0 game at the half turning into a 33-7 game when the game is over against a really terrible Vanderbilt defense is not ideal.
Yeah, you definitely like to see some more consistent execution from the Ole Miss offense. So you had the impression that Jackson Dart had a really bad game, and the statistics seem to back that up, but he looked pretty good. I guess most of the highlights I saw were from the first half.
Yeah.
So what did you notice in the second half? Was it, I mean, yeah, like what stalled the offense out?
I mean, it's funny to say this because, you know, overall he was 19 for 28, which is fine. But there were several misses on his part that were just really poorly thrown. Not like necessarily bad choices. Just they just, you know, weren't especially close to being completed. You know, there was the one pick that he threw, which was thrown super high to Hudson Wolf. It would have been a touchdown to Hudson Wolf if he had just, you know, placed it really anywhere catchable. Instead, you know, Wolf tips it and it is intercepted on a tip drill by Vanderbilt. But there were just a number of other things where, you know, his accuracy was just off. And like you said, like the stats definitely back it up, 36.7 QBR, which is, I believe, his worst, of his entire career. And that against Vanderbilt and a bad Vanderbilt defense, is, you know, not good.
Yeah. So my positive takeaway from that is Hudson Wolf end zone targets. That's cool.
Well, it wasn't an end zone target. It was a red zone target where he would have had yards after the catch for the touchdown.
Yeah. Did you notice him playing a decent amount?
I mean, obviously, we don't want Priestcorn off the field. But, I mean, that was his only target. I mean, there were a few other times that I noticed him playing, but, you know, no other significant involvement in the offense.
Did you notice Priestcorn getting any targets? I know he didn't have any receptions.
I don't think so. I don't. It's weird, though, when I say that. I mean, 29 passes, not a single one to Priestcorn. That seems not right. Good question.
Yeah, I mean, his number of targets obviously got started the season off with an injury. Not ideal, but his low number of targets is still pretty shocking to me, man. I figured they would really make a point to push him the ball to open up things for, you know, the receivers.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I guess, like, the receivers aren't having trouble. You know, Dayton Wade, fantastic game from him. 8 catches for 120 yards and a touchdown. He had, on the very long play from Dart, I mean, if Dart had been able to place it in front of him, it was an easy touchdown. But it was a long, long throw. And obviously it was a completion, so that's cool. But Dayton Wade had to kind of sky somebody, which is not necessarily the situation you want to put Dayton Wade in. Yeah, I mean, I think that Priestcorn needs more targets, but it's not like I'm pinpointing who those targets should come away from.
Yeah. Yeah, that is a tough one. And so, yeah, it's interesting to see. I don't know, Jackson Dart, is he like bumping his head against his ceiling right now? Like, it's hard to figure out what's going on with him. I think a lot of us figured that maybe he has a really good season and goes pro this year, but that's not really seeming like the case. I mean, he's certainly not having a bad season, but not looking like you want an NFL drafted quarterback to look.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, look, I think Jackson Dart is a really good quarterback, but he is right now a really good college quarterback. And at times not a really good college quarterback, but I think overall, like, he is a very, I'm very happy that he's on Ole Miss's team. He has problems that the NFL can't really overlook. Those are fixable and, you know, correctable problems, but it's tough to imagine him going out this year, and especially with like how strong the QB class in this class is expected to be. But even beyond that, it kind of like, I wonder if his draft stock would be much better served by coming back another year and kind of showing those problems to have been fixed. We did have a Spencer Sanders pass attempt, a completion.
I saw that completion, in fact.
It was
to Aiden Williams, no less.
Yeah, it was inches away from being a pick six. it was a completion for 14 yards. So that's cool.
There you go.
You know, when the season is over, someone will need to do, you know, the rumored NIL. Amount for Spencer Sanders and figure out how many dollars per yard Spencer Sanders will have been paid this season. Because I think that would be an interesting experience.
Yeah. Also sad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I have come around to this idea that maybe not for as much as they had to spend, but that having a backup quarterback on a team that is really primed for a good, strong year, makes sense. That, like, even if he doesn't get used, that this team couldn't really handle losing a quarterback and then not having someone experienced behind them and therefore faltering and dropping some games they shouldn't, you know, against some of the teams they have already played.
Yeah, yeah, that makes sense. And yeah, I think Sanders still makes Ole Miss the favorite. Were he to have to start a game, makes Ole Miss the favorite in every game other than A&M and Georgia left on the schedule.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're right. There's definitely a lot of value in that.
Yeah. What a quarterback I don't want to see more of is J.J. Pegues in the Wildcat.
Yeah. So well.
So there was a penalty for like a illegal shift, I think, on the first time they tried to do it, and then maybe a handoff for nothing, and then he got tackled for a loss, or no, he got tackled for no gain on the other time. Don't do that anymore. You know, let's run our offense. And I think some of that is probably like, let's get it on tape so that A&M and Georgia have to spend some practice time preparing for it and everything, but like, do they? It kind of didn't work at all. So maybe they just don't prepare for it in any way.
I'd say they're probably safe.
Yeah. So let's talk about the defense. The defense, you know, like J.J. Pegues, he's our transition because, you know, he played offense, but he actually really shown actually the past tense of shine, or is it shined? It's shined, right?
It's shown. I'm pretty sure it's shown.
He's shown. Really? He's shown on the defense. The top three tacklers on the team were all defensive linemen, which, as you texted me like halfway through the game, which it was the case then, and you said like, that's usually pretty good. It stayed that way through the game. So yeah, whenever your top tacklers are defensive linemen, you're probably winning. And they were Cedric Johnson, Jared Ivey, and J.J. Pegues were the top three. Jared Ivey had 2.5 sacks, which was awesome. he's not, you know, I have never viewed him as a multi-sack kind of guy. And some of it was just like what came to him and Vanderbilt's bad and all that sort of stuff. But he and Cedric Johnson did have several plays where they, I guess, made something happen pre-snap or right at the snap and kind of like ended up unblocked. And it didn't seem to be like a designed unblocked kind of scenario, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So I'm just looking at box score stuff. Let's talk some interesting numbers. Yeah. So Cedric Johnson, JJ Pegues, Jared Ivey were the leading tacklers. Ladarius Tennyson fourth, which is not too surprising if he's healthy. John Saunders, Jamarius Brown with five. I haven't seen much of him this season, a true freshman defensive lineman.
Yeah, he played a ton of him at all. Was that?
Oh, really? Yeah. Really? That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Let's see. Jamon Gordon, Akilo Stone both had four and three tackles. Mm. And then, Dijon Anthony with one tackle. Mm-hmm. Sunter and Perkins, one tackle.
Yeah.
Jeremiah Jean-Baptiste, one tackle. Monte Montgomery, one tackle. That's really odd.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. The linebackers, in terms of stats, didn't really put up anything in this game. But again, like, look, Vanderbilt had 229 yards of offense. They had 169 rushing and 60 passing yards. So, like, the defense was working. But the defensive line was just getting tons of penetration. And a lot of times things just didn't get to that level. Didn't get to the second level on runs.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So Jalen Knox has a couple of tackles on the sheet. I wonder if he played. So I know there was talk of him moving to safety once he kind of worked his way out of the receiver rotation, or I don't know if those are special teams, but he has a couple. And then Chris Graves has a couple, cornerback transfer from Miami, true freshman last year, four-star kind of guy.
Yeah. And so I can't speak to Jalen Knox. I would assume special teams, but like by the end, a ton of guys were playing because it was just over. So he might have been on the last couple of drives at safety or something like that. Chris Graves, I think, probably played because DeMarco Williams was out, I think, with like a minor injury. It actually sort of exposes like DeAndre Prince and Zamari Walton are really good. And who are the backup corners?
Yeah, no Deshaun Gaddy. I don't see him on the sheet.
I haven't seen much from Deshaun Gaddy since the dropped pick six that would have ended the LSU game.
Yeah, yeah. Interesting. I mean, you know, drops on defense are easily forgivable.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that it was necessarily like a punishment thing or something like that. I just like, I don't remember him, you know? Yeah.
Yeah. That's interesting. He was supposed to be a pretty big contributor.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sure that he's playing some. Some of it is probably just like, also, the offenses that Ole Miss has played 3 weeks in a row have not been able to throw at all. Honestly, I still do pay a lot of attention to where the ball is. So, like, maybe he's in plenty of plays and he's just never, you know, targeted and all that. I don't know. Last thing on Vanderbilt is, once again, Ole Miss was penalized more than its opponent with two more penalties. So Ole Miss with six and Vanderbilt with four. What are you going to say, right? We are close to last in penalties against and also opponent penalties. So fun place to be.
Kept it close this time, though.
We did keep it close, especially in yards. Yeah, we were only six more yards than they were, but also two more total penalties. Let's talk about A&M. So we'll get into it. it with a little bit like statistical breakdown and that sort of thing, but just like general thoughts on A&M. And I don't mean like, do you think we're going to win, but what do you think of the team?
I mean, I've hardly seen any Texas A&M football this season.
What do you think of the program?
Do not apologize for that.
Yeah. What do you think of the program? Let me say that.
I mean, their program's in such a bad spot right now. Maybe not quite as bad as last year. I think all of the expectations that came in with that recruiting class, that ridiculous recruiting class they brought in last year, and then just crazy struggles, you know, tons of guys hitting the portal, just every issue you don't want to have with a football program Texas A&M had last year. So maybe this year there aren't as many expectations. There's not as much pressure, and maybe they're playing a little more free because of that. I mean, the results still aren't great. They haven't really done anything impressive other than play Alabama pretty close. Is that wrong?
Yeah. I mean, Alabama is the only good team. I guess Miami is a team that they have played this season. And Miami, like, we can debate whether Miami is a good team. But yeah, it's basically been just they lost by 6 to Alabama.
Yeah. And you know, I mean, their wins against Auburn, Arkansas, and South Carolina, they're not bad. I mean, those all seemed like, you know, comfortable wins, not blowouts, but comfortable, which is, you know, about what Ole Miss did, against Auburn and Arkansas. And then, you know, South Carolina kind of appears to be falling apart, but still a team with some talent, especially, you know, a good quarterback as well. So, but I mean, they're 2-6. Yeah. So I don't
know. South Carolina's a mess. But South Carolina almost beat, like, they were up on Georgia at the half. Like, you know, I think your point is valid. And A&M beat Arkansas and Auburn worse than Ole Miss did. In terms of points and spread. I'm pretty nervous about this one. I think that their program is like hilarious. The fact that, you know, they pay Jimbo Fisher $1 billion a year to go 5-7 last year and so far be 5-3 with, you know, losses to Alabama, Tennessee, and Miami is probably not where they want to be in year 6 of Jimbo Fisher. But they recruit incredibly well. And so they have, you know, tons of great, talented players. They're just not putting it together. Bobby Petrino has not been some sort of miracle worker savior for the offense, which is great. But the defense is very strong, and DJ Durkin has obviously put together, you know, some good plans and all that to face the opponents they've played against. The only team that has really gone crazy against them was Miami, 48 points against A&M. That would be nice. I have a feeling that if Ole Miss gets to 48, it will win the game.
Yeah, that's fair to say.
Yeah, but I mean, Alabama just 2 weeks ago got to 26. Tennessee scored 20. Let's go to some stats for a minute, because I think that there are very worthwhile to review statistics. Their defense in opposing yards per play is ranked 8th in the country with 4.3. They are 7th in opponent yards per rush with just 2.8. So they're allowing 2.8 yards per carry, which is very low. They are 1st in sack percentage. So they are leading the country in sacks as a percentage of dropbacks. Again, not good, especially with an offensive line that has been fine lately, but you know, has shown, at least early in the year, showed a major problem with giving up pressure. And finally, is we don't know if it's a result of just three bad defenses, I guess four bad defenses in a row, or if it's that they're actually, you know, playing well now. So yeah, I'm pretty nervous. One other statistic, they are first in the country in opponent penalties per play. So their opponents are being penalized more than anyone else.
Boy, we love to see that, don't we?
We love it. We love it. And it is, you know, obviously totally random. It has nothing to do with who they are or the size of their stadium or the, you know, their crowd or anything. It is just random happenstance that their opponents are penalized more than anyone else in the country.
Right. So we'll definitely see how that comes into play. I'm sure it will. Here's a good stat, if you're Ole Miss. So A&M started the season with Connor Wegman at quarterback. He accumulated 979 passing yards, 8 touchdowns, 2 interceptions, only 3 sacks. Injured, out for the year. In comes Max Johnson. Johnson has attempted more passes, has 1,147 yards, 8 touchdowns, 4 interceptions, 13 sacks compared to 3. So,
yeah,
I don't know if their offensive line has fallen apart, if they have played tougher defenses, or if he is particularly bad at holding on to the ball too long, but A&M has started allowing a ton of sacks since Johnson came on the scene.
Yeah, I mean, I think Connor Wegman is a really good quarterback, and I'm sad that he's not playing. I actually really love to watch good quarterbacks play. But for the sake of Ole Miss winning this game this weekend, I'm glad that Max Johnson is playing and Connor Wegman is not. Max Johnson has played against Alabama, Tennessee, and, you know, some other opponents where Connor Wegman loaded up on some easy defenses, and Miami, I guess, who's also not very good. Georgia Tech beat Miami, which is a fun thing to think about. But yeah, Max Johnson is definitely less scary of a quarterback than Connor Wegman is. I think that A&M's key to victory is going to be running very well. So if they're able to run well against the Ole Miss defense and not put too much pressure on Johnson and then play great defense, that's their key to victory. That's how they win.
Yeah, I think so. And playing well on third down, I think that's something that inferior teams have done against Ole Miss this year that has made games a little closer than they otherwise would have been. It's just staying on the field, on offense when it's third down, even third and long. If A&M does that, they'll be in pretty good position. You know, the Ole Miss defense just keeps getting better, though. My confidence in this game is relatively high. I couldn't tell you why. I think it's because just A&M doesn't feel like they have much momentum going right now, and not a ton of motivation. I think these guys expected to be, you know, part of a top 10 kind of program, and the motivation to gut it out for the Independence Bowl at some point is going to start fading on them.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is a possible thing. I will say, I'm not crazy to think that the offensive line has struggled, because even like with the last 3 weeks and everything like that, the Ole Miss offense, I was just looking at some of our stats as you were talking, 106th in QB sacks allowed, in a bad way. So yeah, not so great at keeping Dart upright.
Yeah, that's interesting.
I should actually say, I said it wrong. It's not sacks allowed, it's sack percentage. So that, you know, considers the fact that we throw a lot less. Our pass play percentage is 42% on the year, which is 113th in the country. We're running a ton more than we pass. But sure. But when we throw, 8.5% of the time, this is sack.
Yeah, that's certainly not good. You'd hope that we could do some things to address that. I mean, the offensive line, it's not good this year, but it's better in pass protection, I think, than last year.
I think so, too.
Fewer just lookout plays, guys just coming completely unblocked.
I would also say that Dart does hold the ball too long. He's always looking to make something happen, which is cool and can lead to really big plays, but it can also lead to sacks when he could have just kind of, you know, thrown it away or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's probably the biggest factor at this point is, you know, he, I think, lacks the ability or does not use the ability to do a quick three-step drop and, you know, throw a slant. That kind of thing does not appear to be something that he does.
Mm-hmm.
I think that gets him in a lot of trouble. And I think that's his biggest issue with making it to the next level is the ability to quickly take what's in front of him, to quickly identify weaknesses in the defense. And I think, you know, his tendency to hold on to the ball just throws wide receivers off of their route tree. You know, it forces them to improvise way too much. That creates a lot of issues for what otherwise would be a really, really good offense.
Yeah. Okay, so let's actually just do predictions then. What do you think is going to happen this weekend?
This sounds like, I know if the spread were 14, that would be ridiculous, but I think Ole Miss is going to win by 14. I do. I think we, you know, certainly encounter a motivated A&M team, and I think we wear them down, maybe make a couple of big plays, maybe a couple turnovers, and I think we pull away. I think it's something like 35-21.
Okay. I'm actually going to go the other direction. I think that A&M's going to win, and I think they'll win by more than a touchdown. I could see like a 10-point spread. I have a reputation among some of our friends of being a pessimist. Some of our friends think that I'm an optimistic Ole Miss fan, which is a weird place to be. I don't think this is just me being pessimistic. A&M gets to the quarterback, and I'm worried they're going to get to the quarterback a lot on Saturday. And we were really successful against them last year offensively, which is wonderful. A repeat of that would be great. Quinshon Judkins went crazy in that game, which would also be excellent. But I'm really nervous about it. I think that they have, like I said, shut down everyone other than Miami that they played this year. And we have a good offense, but I think that our flaw of pass protection is their greatest strength. And that's a tough flaw to have when you're playing an elite pass rushing team.
Yeah, I mean, I'd agree there's some concerns. I don't think that's a bad pick. I'm definitely making my prediction based on the dynamic between Lane Kiffin and Jimbo Fisher right now.
Sure.
I think that and the quarterback advantage Ole Miss has. I mean, we spent a lot of this podcast talking about Jackson Dart's limitations, but he's a better quarterback than Max Johnson. And I don't think it's terribly close.
No, yeah, he definitely is. And the Ole Miss offense is better than the A&M defense or A&M offense. You know, definitely. It definitely is better than the A&M offense. I just think that the A&M defense might be quite a lot better than the Ole Miss defense, even though the Ole Miss defense has played really well. The Ole Miss defense is playing very sound football. They are in the right place. When they're there, they make plays. It's, you know, awesome to see guys not running wide open and all that sort of stuff. When it comes down to it, I don't think that there definitely are not as many, like, budding superstars on the Ole Miss defense as there are possible on the Texas A&M defense, though. And that's what I think makes the difference.
That's true. All right. Good picks. We'll see what happens.
That's right.